Todd, you were picking up about magnetic signals, and we got, the clock got us there.
That's all right. Let's see. The idea is that when we leave our bodies, the magnetic components embodied in a very dense distribution of magnetic crystals in our brains, that retains its coherency when we're out of our bodies, so that what we experience subjectively as reality supported by our brain's activity can continue on. And there is an entity that physics knows about that can cover this ground. It's called a soliton. And the soliton is a standing wave. If you imagined a wave in a stream that stood still and didn't flow with the stream, mm-hmm. you'd have an idea what we're talking about. And such things have been observed. And if you have a soliton that contains information the way a hologram does, with two sources and interference patterns that actually hold the information, then you have the capacity for subjective experience outside of our bodies and existing in the medium of the Earth's magnetic fields. Now, another way to take the same, to approach the same question is simply to look at out-of-body experiences as they're commonly reported. And people have out-of-body arms and legs. They call it a subtle body or an energy body or an etheric body or what have you. Why not an out-of-body brain?
That's not a bad idea.
So if our brains continue to exist, or our capacity for subjective experience continues to exist, then you have out-of-body experiences in which people can experience all sorts of things, including the full range of human emotions, without the need for a physical brain.
I was going to say, which could explain why so many people have these abilities outside of the body.
Yes. People do certainly experience unusual things when they're outside of their bodies. I haven't studied spontaneous out-of-body experiences anywhere near as I've looked into near-death experience, out-of-body experience.
Are you convinced that these near-death experiences would prove, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that something exists after death?
Well, beyond the shadow of a doubt is a tall order.
I know.
But I believe they certainly evidence it. I accept it myself. Yeah, I guess that's the answer to your question.
Do you accept it yourself because of your own experiences that you've talked about, or because of a belief system?
Well, because of a belief system, but my belief system is largely derived from the knowledge that has been learned by near-death studies and near-death research.
You know, I have always, Todd, been so perplexed about, you know, the science of the brain. And, you know, you're talking about the ability to have this so-called brain outside of the body. And maybe that can't explain it, because not a lot of scientists have said that or will go there. You know, I guess the other half, the other side, simply puts a spiritual twist to it and ties it in that way. But, you know, we're all energy. And it's very possible that whatever is happening truly has a physics behind it. We just don't really understand it.
And I'm no physicist. But I will tell you that I believe that the near-death experience is actually the experience of death, the experience of the death process, interrupted by resuscitation. Now, if we have the capacity or if we're forced to die in a certain way, if dying and having these experiences is a human behavior, which I realize stretches the word behavior a little bit, but if it's a human behavior, and if we all have it, then, and all human behaviors, all universal human behaviors, are the result of our evolutionary history, then the death process is an evolutionary adaptation that contributed to the survival of our species at some point in our evolutionary history.
I'm going to ask you something you might not be able to answer, but if you
wouldn't be the first.
But if you can, you'll probably give us the best answer we've ever had.
Well, I hope so.
If from the moment someone physically dies, where the body stops to function, I'll put it that way, could you kind of give us your best feelings on what you think happens then?
What they experience subjectively?
Yes.
It depends on who they are, what culture they are, what culture they're from. There are even differences that have been noted in the near-death experiences reported by those who die suddenly, car crashes and so forth, and those who are able to anticipate their death, like cardiac patients,
yeah.
Who have only a little while to live, and their doctors tell them this. But in general, there seems to be a pattern. It's been published and put out where people can see it. It's called the Ring Scale, and those who want to learn a little more about it should look into the work of Kenneth Ring, for whom it is named. And a typical first phase of the near-death experience is an out-of-body experience. That's what most people in the field agree on. I include the emotions that were happening just before the person died as a part of that process, but we may not return to that. The first is an out-of-body experience. The second is the experience of going through a tunnel or being in the void. And the descriptions of the void match my experience of the void that I had during childhood epileptic seizures. Sometimes those voids even have the point of light in the middle of it. And then the person goes through the tunnel and gets into the light, or they see that point of light and move towards it and enter it. Then the next thing that's commonly reported is meeting what's called dead friends and relatives, but it's not always dead friends and relatives. I know a woman who had a near-death experience and saw Jim Morrison. I've counted no fewer than 3 near-death experiences that include references to Elvis Presley.
So Morrison is dead then?
Well, evidently so. And I'm sorry to say this, but so is Elvis.
That's true.
So what I think is happening there is that people are encountering, they're having the experience of meeting with other people who they know are dead. And what this conveys to the person is, you are dead. This is the other world. This is the, if you want to use the term, this is the afterlife. And then when they're there, they know they're dead, but it's a joyful reunion. This is your old girlfriend whom you saw in college and who died tragically in a car crash.
Yeah.
And you never really got over her. And there she is. And you can look into her eyes and she smiles and she loves you and something feels complete. And then you might say to yourself, hey, this being dead stuff isn't all that bad.
Is it that way until the end of time for you? I mean, does it just go on endlessly, or is there some kind of end to all of this?
Well, there are a couple of other phases, but apparently there is an end. There is an end to a near-death experience. Whether there's an end to life or whether there's an end to consciousness after the body stops functioning is another question. But after you meet with dead friends and relatives, you then find yourself, and now you're bathed and covered in this light, and everything that you perceive is made of this light. And then a single being will emerge, either causing the rest or at the same time as the rest sort of withdraw, or he just appears. And near-death experience researchers have called this the being of light, and most people who experience it without hesitation call it God. Many call it an angel, but we're definitely dealing with a being whose presence is made of light and fills you with a sense of love and being accepted. And I believe that prepares you, that sense of being totally accepted, absolutely as you are, for the next phase, which I believe is the most crucial one in the near-death experience, in the death process, and the reason for its whole existence. And that's the life review.